Welcome to Citizens Climate University tonight. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Seuss, and I'm very excited tonight to introduce our very own Vice President of Legislation and Research, Dr. Danny Richter. And at this point, I'll just do a quick bio on Danny and then pass it off to him after reviewing our learning goals. Danny came to the work in climate by way of medicine, realizing that the potential for a warming world to make lots of people sick, he figured the best thing he could do for the most people was to focus on preventing that warming in the first place. So this led him to pursue a PhD in oceanography at Scripps, figuring an understanding of past warming and cooling would help him counter the current human-caused warming. And since then, Danny was actually the first staffers to join in 2013 CCL after 5 years as a volunteer, completing his PhD and getting paid to do scientific research on all seven continents. And in DC, he established our office where he's been responsible for developing our overall legislative strategy. So you've got the right guy on the line tonight. And with that, let's just quickly review why we're all here. A threefold learning goal for tonight's attendees. Hopefully afterwards, all of us on the line will be able to understand the history of the Climate Solutions Caucus, its mission, purpose, and accomplishments. We also are really going to quickly review how to locate those educational resources available to supporters on community. But largely, as we've mentioned, we're here really to have you ask questions and voice your perspective with Danny and CCL staff on this essential topic. So to do that, Danny's going to go over our history and timeline of the caucus, the support resources available, as well as a new handout that's in the works. He's going to give you a little sneak peek tonight. We're going to have a chance to respond to some criticism that's been fielded on the caucus and how to best handle that, and then open it up for a Q&A discussion and wrap up with some final thoughts. So without further ado, I'll pass it to you, Danny. And again, thank you all for making it on the line tonight. Take it from here.
All right. Thank you very much, Brett. And thank you, everybody, for being on the call tonight. So what is the Climate Solutions Caucus? The Climate Solutions Caucus is a bipartisan group in the United States House of Representatives which will explore policy options that address the impacts, causes, and challenges of our changing climate. The caucus was founded in February of 2016, so just over 2 years ago, by two South Florida representatives, Representative Carlos Curbelo and Representative Ted Deutsch, who serve as the chairman of the caucus. And I think since we're covering the history here, I think it's worth revisiting the document that was filed with the Committee on House Administration that actually created the caucus. And the quote in that document is, "The caucus will serve as an organization to educate members on economically viable options to reduce climate risk and protect our nation's economy, security, infrastructure, agriculture, water supply, and public safety." So this is something that I think it's important to remind ourselves of what a caucus is and what a caucus does. And the purpose of this caucus is to educate its members about options for reducing climate risk. That is the purpose of this caucus. And I think that we at CCL and many other people around the country expect greater things out of the caucus. And I think that it's worth thinking about that, thinking about what the members of the caucus believe they're doing and what we hope they can do are not necessarily the same thing. And the other thing that I'll highlight here is comparing them to other caucuses and how active they are. I had a meeting with a colleague at the Environmental Defense Fund who spent several years on the Hill, and she asked how many times the caucus met, and I told her, on a member level, they're meeting quarterly. On a staff level, they're meeting monthly. And she was very impressed. If you get a caucus to meet even once a year, you're doing quite well, is what she said. So the standard for caucuses is actually not very high. So for the caucus to do all that it has done, I think is really quite quite special relative to what most caucuses do. So now let's consider the timeline for the caucus. Now, I mentioned that it was founded in 2016, February of 2016, 2 years and 2 months ago, and it was founded with just four members. And the first meeting was in the 114th Congress, and this is the meeting that was featured in the Years of Living Dangerously episode that also featured CCL and Jay Butera. And that first meeting was, the focus of that was actually carbon pricing. So this is an issue near and dear to the hearts of CCL, and that was what their first meeting was about. Three Democrats, three Republicans. First meeting was about carbon pricing, and they've since gone further afield. And going back to that statement, it doesn't exist to support economically viable carbon pricing options. It's all options to reduce climate risk. So as much as we would like them to talk about carbon pricing until they pass it, the founding document is to cover all options. So in January, on January 3rd of 2017, the caucus was reestablished. It was first established in the 114th Congress, it was reestablished in the 115th Congress with just six Republicans and nine Democrats after the November 2016 election. But the membership was quickly brought back into bipartisan balance and has since swelled to more than 70 members. May 4th, 2017, caucus members John Delaney and John Faso introduced the Climate Solutions Commission Act, H.R. 2326, along with 10 other caucus members. The legislation would establish a bipartisan panel to review, quote, economically viable actions or policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, end quote, and make recommendations to the President, Congress, and states. On July 13th of 2017, the caucus voted as a bloc to defeat an anti-climate amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA Act. This was the first time that the caucus had voted as a bloc, that the chairman had whipped the caucus, and they got pretty much everybody to take the pro-climate vote. On September 13th of 2017, the caucus held a meeting discussing the economic impacts of climate change on the outdoor and tourism industries. This was a very well attended briefing with a lot of good member interactions with the speakers. On November 1st, 2017, three Democratic caucus members and 14 other Democrats introduced a carbon pricing bill. And 10 caucus members spoke on the House floor about climate change and the need for bipartisan action. You can watch all of their speeches if you download the presentation at this link. On November 30th of 2017, 12 House Republicans, eight of whom were at the time caucus Climate Solutions Caucus members, signed a letter to congressional leadership opposing drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. On January 7th of 2018, many caucus members spoke out on offshore drilling. There's a roundup of their statements in the hyperlink embedded in this presentation, and even more may have come out after this piece was published. On January 30th of 2018, caucus Democrat Representative Don Beyer introduces a carbon cap and dividend bill in the House called the Healthy Climate and Family Security Act of 2018. You can find details at this link. And just so we're not forgetting about the Senate, there is a companion bill of this, which was also introduced in the Senate by Senator Chris Van Hollen. On February 7th of 2018, the caucus reached 70 members. Among the 35 Republicans is former Energy and Commerce Committee Chairman, Representative Fred Upton. On February 23rd of 2018, a bipartisan group of six caucus members co-sponsors the Challenges and Prizes for Climate Act of 2018 to spur innovation in areas needed to combat climate change. You can find more details at the hyperlink embedded into the presentation. And the most recent act, this is just a week ago as of this recording, two Republicans on the Climate Solutions Caucus, Representative Carlos Curbelo and Mia Love, joined with Representatives Diana DeGette and Susan Delbene to introduce House Resolution 825, bipartisan resolution to acknowledge the impact that climate change is having on outdoor recreation and to support policies to address the problem. And you can find this more complete timeline here on this slide that just came up. If you go to take action on community, and then on the left-hand sidebar, you go support Climate Solutions Caucus. You have all sorts of resources there. So you have who are the caucus members. You have here in this slide, the tab to join is highlighted. So you can see if you want your member of Congress, who is not already a member, if you want them to join, here's how they join. There's other items under take action, talking points, and we'll give you an example of that later in the presentation. And then that fifth tab, timeline. That's where you can find a full timeline for the 115th Congress of what they've been up to. And then there are also some additional resources which we'll show you later in the presentation. So we just want you to know that this is here. This resource is here. If you're interested in defending the caucus, if you want to know what they're doing, that's where you find it on CCL Community. So now let's dig into this. Let's talk about some key messages about the caucus and addressing some concerns that people may have about the caucus. So the key messages of the caucus, I would say, are these, and there are three sentences here. So the first one is that the Climate Solutions Caucus is depoliticizing the issue, making it safe and politically smart for elected officials to talk about and then tackle climate change. So that's the first sentence. Second sentence, bipartisan is best. We get better, longer lasting solutions with both parties at the table. And the third sentence is the Climate Solutions Caucus is already having an impact. It is a process, and we see that process ramping up. We see evidence that the caucus and the forum that it represents, the discussion for exploring these options, is having positive effects, and that is showing up in legislation. And if you want to summarize this, if you want to explain the caucus to someone very quickly, here's an elevator pitch which you could use. The Climate Solutions Caucus is a bipartisan group in the United States House of Representatives working on solutions to climate change. The caucus is evenly bipartisan with equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans and Democrats on board. As these legislators work together and welcome more members of Congress onto the caucus, we're confident they will identify and pass strong bipartisan climate legislation. On the first one, the Climate Solutions Caucus is depoliticizing the issue. To me, this is the most important role for the caucus. The most important role they can play is to depoliticize this issue. The way I think about it, does the climate have a better shot if both parties agree that we should do something about climate, or does it have a better shot if we rely on one party to do something about climate? For me, the answer is very clearly, it's better if we have both parties working on this. And I think that the way we get both parties to do that is through this caucus, to depoliticize the issue, to protect a forum in today's politics where members who disagree with each other can sit across from each other at the table and have a respectful discussion. How many fora in today's politics exist where members can sit down and have a respectful discussion with each other? And that's what the caucus is. And when I think about that goal, does the climate have a better shot when people are talking to her, when both parties are one party? If you're going to get both parties to that point, I think you need to protect these fora. I think you need to protect fora where people who disagree with each other sit down, discuss their differences in a respectful way. And then on bipartisan is best, the example that jumps out is Obamacare. That was a policy which was passed with one party voting for it, and the opposing party made it their mission over the following 6 years to tear it down, and they're having some success at that. And so that's the really to me, a very clear, very recent example of the importance of working in a bipartisan fashion. You need buy-in from both parties at the beginning, otherwise you're inviting them to just attack that over the better part of the next decade, and then get to a point where they can have some success. And on the third point, we're gonna dig a little bit deeper into that. And one document which we're which has been created, Jay created this document, and we're gonna go over the three parts of this document. This is a summary of the document. We are working on getting final approval from the caucus to share this. We did get a little bit of a flag today asking us to hold off on this, except for internal use. And so right now we're sharing this with you internally, but we're not going to move forward with that beyond that. So there are three sections to this document. The three sections are meetings, briefings, and delegations, so things that the caucus has done. The second section is legislative initiatives. And then the third section, sign-on letters. So let's look at that first section, meetings, briefings, and delegations. Now, the timeline that is on Community GAN, that only goes over the 115th Congress. This goes over the entire history, the whole 2 year and 2 month history of the caucus. So one, we have a staff del, the naval station in Norfolk. Staff del is staff delegation, meaning that staffers from members of Congress went and checked out the naval station at Norfolk. They examined sea level rise impact on naval operations. There was another staff delegation or staff del to the National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, Colorado for NREL project briefings. There was a co-del. This is members of both parties are going. It's another delegation, so it's member level delegation. This is planned for New Orleans in June of this year to tour climate adaptation projects. But member meetings have included fact finding conversations with science and years of Congress and business leaders, foreign dignitaries, and former cabinet members. there have also been member level meetings with winter sports industry leaders, ski area owners, and Olympic athletes. Member meetings with solar producers and leading utilities regarding power generation. There was a member meeting on energy efficiency with the Department of Energy and Alliance to Save Energy. There was a member briefing on ocean acidification, sea level rise, and flood insurance, a member meeting on climate change and national security, and a staff briefing on solutions ideas with Princeton Carbon Mitigation Institute. So there's a professor from Princeton who was there. There was a staff briefing on regenerative agriculture and soil carbon sequestration. Staff briefing on climate change impacts on healthcare industry and first responders, and a House special order hour of floor speeches encouraging bipartisan climate cooperation. Finally, the hosted caucus bipartisan member dialogue event in the Quicker Welcome Center. So remember that staffer for the Environmental Defense Fund said, if you're a caucus and you're meeting once a year, you're doing pretty well. They've only been around 2 years, and not only have they been meeting at a member level, they've been taking field trips to have fact-finding missions. They've been meeting with a wide variety of stakeholders to discuss a whole suite of climate solutions. So they've been very active. Now, the next section here is legislation. And so there are a few things here, and I think this is really important. So for those of you who are on the call who actually have members who are on the Climate Solutions Caucus, and there are a few liaisons here, you know that there's the caucus tracks and lists bipartisan climate-related bills for member consideration. So it's about that education part, they're highlighting these bills. And the liaisons for the members of Congress on the caucus, they have this list of bills. 16 bills have been listed. Two of them have actually been passed into law. So there is already a legislative footprint as a result of the caucus. H.R. 1090, the Technologies for Energy Security Act, was a bipartisan bill originated by two caucus members. Ultimately, I think it had 118 co-sponsors with a healthy number from the caucus. This is now the law of the land. There was also H.R. 3761, the Carbon Capture Act. This was originated by caucus members, supported by some other members, and this is another one that has become the law of the land. We also have the caucus successfully defended the climate provisions in the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, rallying. This is the first time they actually whipped the vote, meaning that the caucus chairman went to the people who were then in the caucus. There were 24 in the caucus at that time, and they said, this is a caucus vote, you need to vote for it. And they were successful in defeating that. They were actually joined by many of their colleagues. And with just the caucus and the Republican climate resolution, those votes alone were enough to actually defeat that measure. So they do have some power. And of course, they also introduced, members on the caucus also introduced the Republican climate resolution, that's HRES 195. Currently, that has 24 Republican co-sponsors. Let's see here. And then 10 Republicans led the effort to preserve methane leakage rules in the continuing resolution. So this is towards the beginning of the Congress. So those are the legislative initiatives. And then there are also many sign-on letters, and I think we can go through these quickly. But there was a letter opposing tariffs on imported solar panels, requesting inclusion of climate considerations in national security strategy, encouraging the president to remain in the Paris Climate Agreement, in support of the new source performance standards for power plants, opposing inclusion of the ANWR exploration into the tax bill, and urging inclusion of the climate language into the MOCONVA. I forget what that stands for at the moment, but and the Interior Environment Appropriations Bill Committee reports for fiscal year 18. So this is getting into the weeds of the appropriations process, but this is a letter that a number of the caucus got on board with. So this is a summary of what the caucus has done. So now, responding to criticism, and here for the first one, I'd like to bring it back to that thing that I focus on with the caucus so much, which is this is about detoxifying the issue. And there's some research that continues to highlight that one of the main factors that drives public opinion on climate change is elected officials' public stance. In the literature, they're known as elite cues. And this is the piece that is most highly correlated with large swings in the public opinion on climate change. And what they mean by elite, they do mean elected officials. And the more Republicans you get, the more elites who are giving cues to the base saying climate change is real, you can be a conservative who wants to conserve, it's okay to care about climate change. And we should do something about that. And if we're going to get something that is as big of a deal as carbon fee and dividend, we're going to need large majorities of both parties who feel that way. And if we're going to get there, again, we're going to need a lot more elite cues from the caucus and from a larger caucus being able to do that. And Brett's just highlighted some of the resources that back this up. So that's again, for me, that's the real reason of the caucus. And the next thing, this is a figure from a great blog that Flannery wrote. And in it, you see there was some media that came out around the LCV, the League of Conservation Voters Environmental Report Card. And this is something they do every year. And a lot of the media was pretty down on the caucus and their scores. But it was pretty clear, just scratching the surface of those scores, that the reporters did not really dig into this. They just took it very much at surface value and didn't really look at the change over time. Well, in this blog, we look at the change over time. Flannery Winchester did a great job. At the time that this was released, there were 35 Republicans on the caucus. Of course, now there are 36. 15 had improved their scores from 2016 to 2015. 9 of them were freshmen, meaning they had enough scores, so there's no score to improve. 9 of those scores did go down. One stayed the same, and one was from American Samoa. So, and they're only allowed to vote in committee. So the representative from American Samoa could not have a score. Another factor with the 9 scores that went down, one of those scores that went down was the score of Carlos Curbelo, the co-chair of the caucus. And for some of them, some of the votes, there were 35 votes which were scored. And for some of those votes, he was actually in Florida right after the hurricane that had ravaged his district. So there's so some of those votes, his score might be artificially low because he was dealing with the climate impacts in severe climate impacts in his district. So there's really a lot that goes in here. And some other things that are relevant. If you look at the 35 votes, only 5 of those are directly linked to the climate. A lot of them are other environmental issues. Of course, we're glad that they're voting on this, but this is the Climate Solutions Caucus. And when you look at the caucus as a whole, and the Republicans specifically, the average for the Republicans on the caucus, the average score was 11 percentage points higher than the Republican Party as a whole. So in just 1 year, 1 year's change, most of these members have been on the caucus for less than a year because it is experiencing exponential growth. You can already detect this very significant change. And to me, I think that that's remarkable. I think that to just take this and act like this has been around forever and that it doesn't take time to detoxify an issue that has been as polarized as climate change, I think that that's really unfair. So I look at those LCV scores and I see those as a big positive. And here's just this graph just shows you the improvement for those 15 who did improve for whom scores are available to compare. And then, you know, the last thing that I want to do before we get to the questions, you know, one of those other resources on communities is just some talking points. And so, for example, this is something that would be available to you on Bipartisan is Best, Create a Better, Stronger, Longer Lasting Solutions for Both Parties at the Table. Climate change is bigger than partisan politics. The considerable number of Republicans on the Climate Solutions Caucus are proof that climate change doesn't need to be a partisan issue. And here are some supporting points. Climate change needs lasting legislative action. Republicans and Democrats on the Climate Solutions Caucus produce a bipartisan bill. That joint solution is likely to stick. And another supporting point, our climate can't wait until the next election. It's important for everyone currently in office to be moving forward on the issue, and the caucus helps them do that. So there's this, and then there's a couple of other talking point trees that you can go into. And here are some additional supporting resources. This is also on community. So, but while Brett goes through those, why don't we open it up for questions?
So the first one is just a quick one from Steve Danny. Are the sign-on letters that you reviewed from that handout available to us?
Yes, they are available. They were publicly made public, and once we get that approved, that document in the original form, it has hyperlinks. And so in those hyperlinks, you'll be able to go to each of those letters. So once we get final approval from the caucus chairman to share that, then that'll be something that you can look up. But
is it all right if in the meantime they also refer to the slide deck and have the presentation kind of available after tonight to kind of look those up one by one?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Here from Debbie that was posed a couple minutes ago. So just in the context overall of caucuses, you know, it feels slow, the amount of work that the Climate Solutions Caucus is doing, she writes. Is this usual? Are there dates of those legislation available for the one pager for the context as well? How does this kind of compare to other caucuses overall, given the fact that, you know, nothing's been actually initiated for carbon pricing in general?
Yeah, so on the dates, those were both rolled into the budget bill. So those were passed I believe that was in February. So they were rolled into the omnibus and they were passed there. So that's the date for those two bills. They were originally introduced as separate bills. They were incorporated into the big one. It can feel slow, but when you look at change and to me, it's still very real. How many people said it would be impossible for you to get to 10 Republicans on the resolution, which came before the caucus? And then it was very real to me how many people said it would be impossible for you to get 10 Republicans who'd be willing to talk to 10 Democrats and join the caucus. And then after the election, we got down to 6, and a lot of people said it'd be impossible. And here we stand at 36 Republicans, and you know there's a couple more pairs in the pipeline. And so, to me, having been experiencing this, there's definitely a shifting baseline, a moving goalpost with all of this. And we've achieved what was perceived as impossible so many times that it's hard for me to say like we haven't achieved a lot. And just the fact that we can look at 36 Republicans who are talking about climate change and say, not a big deal. I think that's pretty remarkable. And I think that, that makes my life harder. but that is exactly the elite Q that is going to detoxify this issue. The fact that we can point to this and say, no, it's normal. I think that is exactly the kind of thing that is going to detoxify this issue and enable us to have members of both parties saying climate change is something we need to address. And anyway, it may feel slow, and it does. It's never fast enough, given where the climate is at. It's never fast enough. But there's a ton of momentum that has to be overcome. And when I look at where we were, and when I think about all the things that we've accomplished that were supposed to be impossible, to me, it feels like we've come a long, long way, very, very quickly.
Thank you, Danny. Excellent question, Debbie. Joyce asks this excellent question that I think really a lot of people would like some more clarification on. Does a representative need to believe or publicly acknowledge that climate change is real and human cause to join the caucus?
No, I don't think so. But they do need to convince the chairman that they're interested in listening. And the very public example of that was Representative Gates, who joined the caucus, and he was challenged on this for statements he had made in the past. And he very publicly, and we wrote a blog on this, I believe, stated in a town hall meeting, no, I believe in climate change. Let me state for the record here, and I think it's important, and I'm on the caucus to learn more. So there's an example where you didn't have any previous statements made publicly, and after joining the caucus, this very, very conservative member was actually quite pugnacious about this, pushed back very hard, saying, no, climate change is real. I want to be on the right side of history. And he has since been an active and productive participant in meetings. Oftentimes I hear questions, you know, asking, and oftentimes, and I don't know where you're coming from, but oftentimes people are concerned about people joining and then subverting the message of the activities of the caucus. And I just don't see any way that that's possible. Since the purpose of the caucus is to educate, the only way they could do that is by jumping around and yelling and shouting in one of the meetings, not all of which are public. And to me, that's just so far outside of the decorum and the respect that does, in fact, still exist among members on the floor of the Chamber of Congress. I just don't see how anybody could subvert the caucus. I don't see how you get a plant in there to sabotage it.
Excellent. And I just put a link to that kind of litmus test that Corbello asked Representative Gates here that Steve wrote in the blog window, Joyce. So hopefully that addresses your question on some level. Geraldine asked this excellent question, just a general, what would you say, Danny, about the best way to ask your representative to encourage them to join the caucus? And I might also add, if Jay wants to add anything on the line on this one, especially given that you've been making a lot of these asks, we'd love to go to both of you on that.
Yeah, so I would say for a Republican office, you'd say, you know, look, these are the impacts we're seeing in the district. This is why, as a constituent, I'm concerned about this. I think it's really important to preserve a respectful space where people who disagree with each other can talk to each other about this. And I want to see a democracy where both sides agree that this is something we need to do. They can disagree about how to do it, but we need to agree that this is a problem that we need to solve. Would you be willing to join this caucus and to signal to me and the other constituents in your district who are concerned about the impacts we're seeing today, that you are learning, doing all you can to learn about this and make informed decisions about our futures? That's how I would ask a Republican. For a Democrat, what I would say is, you know, we very similar language. I would say we think it's very important that we detoxify this issue. And again, I would refer to the space where differing parties can talk to each other in a respectful way. And I would highlight the elite cues and that this is the way we get large majorities of the Republican base to care about this issue. And I would ask them, who's a Republican you already have a good working relationship with? Would you ask that Republican to join the caucus with you? For Democrats, there is a bit of a waiting list that can cut the line if they hop on with a Republican who they find themselves. And many of the recent additions, pairs, have been from that mode, a Democrat asking a Republican. And, you know, members talk to each other. And there's the members on TV, and then there's the members. And members talk to each other. They do have good relationships, and they do have friends across the aisle. So ask them to think about that. Think about who their friends are, and just say, ask your friend. Ask your friend to join this team, this club. And Jay, did you want to weigh in on that?
Well, one thing I like to always say is we need your voice at the table. And if you're not in this conversation, the solutions on climate change are going to evolve within the Climate Solutions Caucus, we believe. And if you're not at the table, we won't have a chance to hear your good ideas. So you're better off helping to shape the conversation. And the other thing I remind members is that the very existence of this caucus has been transformative to Congress. The fact that we have Republicans and Democrats having a civil dialogue on this issue is a landmark, and their presence helps to accentuate that and continue this transformative effect. So for that reason alone, their joining is important.
Thank you so much, Jay and Danny. And I think you're getting a lot of plus ones here, it says, on wanting to get that in writing. So we'll make sure that that question's actually held in the recording. Normally I'm cutting the Q&A, but that one's too good to cut out. So definitely helpful to have something that we can really go to. We have a lot of messaging on what the caucus is, but not on how to make that ask. So that was an excellent question. Thank you very much, Linda. Another question, or Geraldine, I guess. Linda has a question, though, about the level of attendance. What seems to be the average attendance right now for the quarterly member meetings, as well as the monthly staff meetings, and about how many are needed to sign on in order for any given letter to be considered from the caucus?
Yeah, well, there's, on that second one, there's no number for something to be considered from the caucus. So the caucus doesn't do that. And so when we say this is coming out from the caucus, we're saying that all or the majority of the members who happen to be on it are also on the caucus. So that might be a bit misleading. The caucus does not generally have these statements, and they're not expected to. And as for attendance, it's varied and it's difficult because when you go to that first meeting, where it's 100% attendance, but there were, you know, six members on the caucus, to now where there's 72 members on the caucus, and it's just changed so much, so it's hard to give it as a percentage, and that, you know, that would be what is really meaningful. But I would say that it's generally been in the 10 to 15 member range, with a good mix of Democrats and Republicans. Jay, would you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that. I just, to put it in perspective, I think we all know how difficult it is to get two members of Congress in the same room for an hour. That's not easy. So getting 15 to sit down for an hour is, you know, that's pretty good as far as Congress goes. And Brett, you know, maybe people would like to look at those photos on that two-pager. Those are actual member meetings that people can get an idea of what this actually looks like.
Yeah, and then the other part of your question was the staff meetings. I think that most of those have actually, and again, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that most of those are the staff, the chairman, planning out what they're going to send to the members of the staff. There have been a couple meetings where it's all the staff on the caucus, but I do think it's mostly the staff for the chairman, looking at what new bills have been introduced, what's the growth, what message needs to be done, talking with other stakeholders like CCL. Is that about right, Jay?
Yeah, I'd say that's right. The staff meetings vary depending on what's being discussed. And the photo that's on the screen, that's the most recent caucus member meeting. And so that gives you an idea of what this looks like when they get together. Some of them are more informal. They're just around a table rather than in the hearing setting.
Excellent. Here's another one for both of you here. Just a quick one on what is the relationship, if you are asked, between CCL and the Climate Solutions Caucus?
I would say that CCL brings the keg to the party. 90% of the pairs who have joined the caucus, I would say, are there because of CCL. They're there because, however they did it, our volunteers asked them to be there. And so CCL does not set the agenda for the caucus meetings. We've made suggestions. Some of them have been listened to. Many of them have not. But our primary role has been growing the caucus, bringing people to the table, and then you know, making sure that people, when they do join, they feel appreciated for joining. That's been our primary role. The caucus chairman have really taken the lead on setting the agenda and the priorities of the caucus. We've really just been bringing people.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to add on that one, Jay?
Well, I think if you go back 5 years or so, CCL's role in coming up with the idea for the caucus, forming it, that it exists because of CCL's idea and work to get it going. So that's part of the history now, but, you know, significant.
I think you're being very modest with the royal we there in saying CCL, Jay. I'm glad that we have a little bit more of a broader history there. And here's one, maybe Jay, if you wanted to take this one first. So when you know, you're making these meetings happen on the Hill, what do you see as the typical reason for a member to join? What is kind of their motivation expressed as to why they end up joining?
They join because their constituents ask them to join. So typically that's what I see. I mean, they're joining because they are, we still live in a democracy. We still live in a representative democracy. And what they're seeing is political will being created in their district by you. And they want to respond to that political will. So, I mean, that's universal, I think, is that they want to be a good representative for the concerns of their constituents. I do think you see a lot of members who join because they are concerned about the climate. But I've also seen again and again and again that concern grow and ownership taken after they join. So I think that there's, you know, the transformation, most of the transformation, I would say, happens after they join the caucus. When they join the caucus, it's really about wanting to, you know, wanting to belong, wanting to learn. And once they join the caucus, that's when they really, I think, you see the transformation after they join. So that's how I would respond to that.
Well, I want to reiterate what Danny said. Time and time again, a member joins. Everyone's surprised that this member joined the caucus, and they have proven to be really valuable members. And there's one I won't name, but when he joined, everyone said it was just because CCL asked him. That's the only reason he's joining. He has become one of the most important members of the Climate Solutions Caucus and a real leader in this space, surprising everybody. So you just never know what you asking a member to join can lead us to.
Do either of you know, the LCV scorecard is published annually. This isn't a new scorecard, but some of the media that was then critical about the scorecard that some of the members on the caucus had, as far as what are the motivations behind why that critical reception?
Yeah. There's a lot of environmental groups who have decided that the only way something's going to get done is with Democrats in office. And so they're not buying into even the possibility of depoliticizing the issue. And if that is your reality, then it's logical to give no quarter to Republicans, to not give them any reason to look good on this issue. And so if that's what you believe, and I think that they believe it truly, and for them that's the reality, why would you say anything good about Republicans? Because it might help them in their election. And so I think that that's what explains it. I think that there's been a decision, the only way anything done on the environment is going to get done is with Democrats. And of course we're trying to change that. That's what I mean when I say I want to live in a democracy where both sides want to do something about climate. I want to go back to a democracy. It's important to note that this has existed in the past. The Clean Air Act, passed with only one dissenting vote in Congress, was passed by a Republican president. You've still got large percentages of Republican voters and big environmental groups, the Nature Conservancy, Audubon, they have large numbers of conservatives there, fishermen, anglers, hunters. They have a very deep farmers, deep appreciation of nature. They want their kids to be able to experience that as well. We're trying to depoliticize it. We're trying to get back to the America where you have both parties who want to conserve. Again, they can disagree on exactly how we want to do that, but it's existed before. We think we can get there again. And if you don't believe that we can get there again, if you do believe that conservatives are never going to want to conserve again, I think that that's how you make these negative articles, and you just jump straight to that.
Any other thoughts on that too, Jake?
Well, yeah, Danny gave a very eloquent answer. I agree with everything he said. You boil it down to three words: election year politics. This is a rough election year. And we're just going to have to roll with that. And I never thought that the caucus would be criticized by environmentalists. It's something that never entered my mind when this whole thing was cooking up. So it surprises me, but here we are. And, and then the media, of course, controversy is more interesting than harmony. And so there's a bit of that to, I think.
Connected to that one, Jay and Danny. So if the answer then, when talking to someone who only believes the Democrats can solve climate change, is that answer then to listen and validate and offer hope, expand, or, you know, make that conversation broader an additional day? You know, how does our organization best engage with a lot of the environmental community right now that's holding on to that as a very separate counter-strategy?
Yeah, for me, this could be a longer conversation, but I like to, what has guided a lot of my thinking is what I call ecosystem-based strategy. And that is that I view the environmental movement as an ecosystem where you have different niches, there are different roles. And I want CCL to love our niche. And I want those who have made that decision, they can love their niche. And I think that it's okay to have groups that disagree on how to do this. That's okay. You know, in democracy, these ideas will compete. The ones that have the most pull to the most people, they will win. And so I don't think there have been very many groups that have had the CCL perspective. And so I think that ours is actually a pretty new idea in this ecosystem. And I think that based on, you know, the numbers that CCL has seen grow and the caucus, I think it's an idea with some cachet. But on the individual level, always listen. Of course you want to listen. You want to hear them out. And you want to understand their concerns, and you want to, but then I would say you also want to present your thought, that, the climate is bigger, planet over party. And, you know, if the only way to get to a livable world was to vote for a Republican, would you do it? My answer is yes, of course. Planet over party. And that's a different perspective. Some people might not get there, but I think that that's the way I view it, that there's an ecosystem, there are many ways, they all work together, and having a diverse approach, a diversity of approaches, and overlapping niches occupied by many organizations is going to make the whole group more likely to succeed in protecting Earth.
Excellent. Connected to that, Debbie also asks this kind of more procedural question. Is there a caucus meeting publicity list ahead of time? Can people find out about these meetings before they happen, or are just the minute meetings and recordings available afterwards, or are those even available?
It depends. Some of the meetings are public, some of the member meetings. Sometimes they invite the press. Oftentimes they do not. There have not been meeting minutes taken, and generally they have not allowed recordings. For some of them, we've had people there and we've blogged about it, and you can view those blogs on the website. In the presentation, Brett has linked to those blogs for those particular meetings, taken from the document that Jay did. But in general, it's so if they haven't taken all of our suggestions there, and I think that there's some things that they could do that in our view would up their impact and their profile, but we've been those are not suggestions that have been taken.
One of the things I'd like to say is that some of the most productive meetings of the caucus have been the closed door meetings, and these are meetings that aren't even on the sheet, that two-page sheet, because they were closed-door confidential topics. And that's when members really open up and have frank conversations. And so the reason for often not inviting press is so that members can feel like they can have a good conversation without it being quoted or misquoted. And so that's a fact.
Excellent, Jay. I'm sure that a lot of progress has been made on the unlisted portion of that two-pager. And what we'll do to close then is, again, all of this is going to be posted on Community. All of these resources that Danny went over are already available on Community. Here's a link, though, to both Dr. Danny Richter and my own contacts. This is Daniel at Citizens Climate and Brett at citizensclimate.org. Here is the URL again to the actual Climate Solutions Caucus page in community. So with that, I am so grateful for the chance to have learned and benefited from all the work that's happening on the Hill, behind and in front of the scenes, from both Danny and Jay. Thank you both so much for giving of your evening to help educate us and inspire us to know what's happening, as well as how to talk about it with the rest of the country right now. And we hope all of you found that this webinar was informative and spoke to the questions that you came wanting to know more about.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Really helpful. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Danny.